Hello and welcome to Weapons and Warfare. For Straight Arrow News, I'm your host, Ryan Robertson. Just ahead on this week's episode, they are one of the largest defense contractors in the world, Israel Aerospace Industries, and they're putting some of their innovations in autonomous capabilities paired with manned combat systems to the test in real time. They'll tell you what their discoveries could mean for U.S. combat troops. And Oshkosh Defense lands an eight-figure contract for the Rogue Fires, an autonomous platform with a pretty diverse range of capabilities. We'll take a look, but first, some headlines you may have missed. In his first trip overseas since he was confirmed, U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said NATO countries need to spend more on defense to ensure peace and U.S. support against any aggression ahead of his first meeting with NATO leadership.
This kind of urgency of this moment requires friends talking to friends about capabilities, about leadership, about stepping up, about burden sharing, and the incentives to say the European continent deserves to be free from any aggression, but it ought to be those in the neighborhood investing the most in that collective, individual and collective defense.
Hegseth noted most NATO countries spend close to 2% of their GDP on defense, but the new Trump administration says that needs to be 5%. The U.S. and South Korean militaries recently teamed up for a joint live-fire exercise in Pochon, South Korea. It was an impressive display of gear, including K1A2 tanks, infantry fighting vehicles, U.S. Stryker armored vehicles, and Apache helicopters. More than 150 units and over 2,000 troops participated in the action.
The value of training for this is a great impact. It's building those relationships with our counterparts, establishing the ability to both simultaneously strike contact on different objectives simultaneously, building communication lines with each other, which, as everyone knows, communication lines are very important on the battlefield.
The exercise took place over 3 weeks and followed a North Korean state media report where Kim Jong-un pledged to boost the country's nuclear program, citing concerns over what he sees as a serious threat from the growing security partnership between South Korea, the U.S., and Japan. While Kim made similar comments before, his recent remarks suggest he's not likely to accept President Donald Trump's offer for a meeting to revive diplomacy anytime soon. And in an unexpected twist, the world's most advanced warplanes from the U.S. and Russia were spotted together for the first time. The $80 million F-35 Lightning II from the United States and the less expensive Russian-made Su-57E Felon both made an appearance at Aero India 2025 in Bengaluru, the capital city of India's most southern state. The F-35 is, of course, the premier fighter jet of the U.S. military, while the Su-57E is known as a fifth-generation stealth multi-role fighter. The five-day event featured more than 900 exhibitors and an excess of 150 foreign companies. Back in December, we reported on Ukraine's use of an all-drone ground attack force in a historic operation that took place near the village of Lipsy in Ukraine's Kharkiv region. It marked a first in the history of warfare. An all-unmanned ground attack team took on and completed a mission against Russian forces. While much of the world is watching and learning from the Ukrainians' efforts in expelling Russians from inside their borders, they aren't the only ones making headway in this type of combat. Israel Aerospace Industries, also known as IAI, is making strides of their own in the area of unmanned combat, and that's the subject of this week's debrief. Over the course of more than seven decades, Israel Aerospace Industries became one of the largest defense contractors in the world. Recognized for its innovative solutions and cutting-edge tech, especially in missile defense, radar, and sensor systems, as well as satellite communications. IAI played a large role in the IDF's efforts to protect the lives of more than 9 million Israelis. And much like Ukraine, IAI is developing new autonomous capabilities paired with manned combat systems to allow smaller forces to do more with the resources they have, what the industry calls force multipliers.
A few years ago, the IDF launched two programs. One is the Carmel. Carmel is equivalent to the Next Generation Combat Vehicle program that runs here in the United States, and IAI is leading this program for the IDF, for the Israel Defense Forces. In parallel, 2 years ago, the IDF also launched a program called SOI, which is Standoff In. Allow the troops to fight from a standoff like they are standing in. In those two programs, and the technologies that involve are robotics technologies, AI, machine learning.
Under the Carmel program, IAI pursued five key capabilities. In 2019, the Israel Ministry of Defense's R&D Directorate looked into how automation and mission autonomy could boost the effectiveness of manned crews. That led to IAI's ELTA Systems Group introducing the Carmel Demonstrator, which allowed just two crew members to tackle complex combat missions that usually would have needed multiple vehicles and three or four crew members. Amir Giva is the Executive Vice President of North American Affairs for IAI. He tells us their efforts are developed to the point where the IDF was able to carry out some missions in its war with Hamas with some robotic assistance.
And in the current conflict, this is what they do. They carry out a robotic combat mission, mainly concentrating on life-saving missions, such as bridging, opening a path, mine clearing, countering IEDs. I need to emphasize, always operator, man in the loop involved.
At last year's AUSA gathering in Washington, D.C., IAI unveiled this robotic wingman on an eight-wheeled vehicle that demonstrated the standoff capabilities of the concept. It allows operators to work at a safer distance from the action than they might have previously been able. Giva says the system itself will work with whatever platform U.S. forces choose to install it on.
We are agnostic to the vehicle, as you saw.
We
took this kind of a vehicle, but we are agnostic to the vehicle. We are providing the technology that might be on any given technology. It depends on the customer, depends on the each one of the services, each one of the army, which vehicle they will prefer. So this is the reason we choose this one. We are not providing the platform, we are providing the technology that will provide those robotics and tools that will allow to implement this kind of autonomous capability in the future.
Well, Giva admits the system is not yet where IAI envisions it eventually going. It did prove its worth in Israel's war against Hamas.
Right now, we're concentrating on life-saving missions. As I mentioned, there are many. There are open paths, breaching, countering IEDs, advance guard missions. The future might be others. It's not ours to decide. Eventually, technology provide all what I mentioned. The operator might do that. And there are several people operating that, because eventually in the battlefield, there are more than one pass to open. So this is the reason there are more than one operator.
There's no word yet from IAI on any pending deals with the DoD. If and when that changes, though, we'll let you know.
Serving you clarity through context, our mission at SAN is to deliver the news straight down the middle. We're different from mainstream media because we spotlight distorted headlines and show you how to do it too. Discover stories that right and left-leaning outlets are choosing not to cover by using our Media Mist tool. Download the SAN app and turn on notifications to have straight facts delivered right to your phone or tablet, and get straight facts anytime at SAN.com.
We talk a lot about the explosive growth of autonomous vehicles in the military here at Weapons and Warfare, and it's a trend showing no signs of slowing down. One of the latest examples comes from the Marine Corps Systems Command and its recent awarding of a nearly $30 million contract to Oshkosh Defense for the Rogue Fires. That's why it's our weapon of the week. meet the remotely operated ground unit for expeditionary fires, aka the Rogue Fires. Built by Oshkosh Defense, it's next-gen autonomous technology the Marines are going to need in any potential conflict with China, when the Corps will be called on to set up on remote islands in the Pacific so it can seize, defend, and control key maritime routes. Based on Oshkosh's Joint Light Tactical Vehicle, it's extremely rugged and mobile, with the ability to carry up to a 6,000-pound payload autonomously.
You can see, looking at the vehicle, that there's no cab, there's no place for a driver to sit. So this vehicle is controlled in a variety of ways that take the Marine or the soldier out of the picture so that they're protected. There's less need for a lot of manpower. Manpower is a critical resource these days, so it gives a lot of flexibility to the services and how they use it.
Jane Keach, a senior director of program management for Oshkosh, tells us there are multiple ways for troops in the field to put the Rogue Fires to work.
The first one is a leader-follower method, where you have one leader vehicle and you can have multiple follower vehicles behind it following along in a convoy type of situation. Or you can do it using like a video handheld controller that you can do from about a kilometer away, depending on line of sight and the terrain. And honestly, it's a much easier way for our young Marines and soldiers. Most of them are used to playing video games, and our customers even told us that in some cases it's easier to teach them to use a video controller than it is to teach them to drive a truck. So it's definitely technology that they're very familiar with.
It's technology built to lessen the reliance on human drivers in high-risk situations, making it easier for Marines to achieve battlefield effectiveness, specifically in the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command. Designed with functionality in mind, Keach says it can be used as a weapons platform as well as play a role in any unit's logistics plans.
It's very versatile to be used for multiple different types of weapons platforms, as well as you could take the weapons platform off and use it as a logistics resupply, autonomous resupply vehicle. So the Marine Corps has intentions of using it for both short range all the way to long range fire weapons platforms, and this is the Naval Strike Missile that's on it now, so it's the first one out of the gate for the Marine Corps. In terms of safety, if you're firing a weapon system off a vehicle, you don't want your people right there with it when that signature is there, so it keeps them away from the platform while it's being fired, and then it lets them rapidly redeploy it back to safety.
Of course, this is our Weapon of the Week segment, so you know the Rogue Fires delivers on that front in a big way.
Well, the Marine Corps is also planning on using it for long-range fires. That includes a Tomahawk missile. And then there's shorter-range, HIMARS types of applications for that as well. But then you can take this across to the Army and use it for really the Rogue platform itself. You can integrate it with anything the payload is capable of holding or carrying.
While it does have the brawns, the Rogue Fires packs in the brains as well. Oshkosh partnered with Forterra to put its auto drive system behind the wheel. A release from Oshkosh touting the deal with the USMC says deliveries will start sometime this year. In this week's comms check, more history being made by American forces in the Red Sea. A U.S. military official familiar with operations in the region confirmed to Weapons and Warfare that U.S. Air Force and Navy combat aircraft used a wide variety of air-to-air munitions to engage one-way attack drones, including the use of advanced precision kill weapon system 2 rockets and AIM-9X Sidewinder missiles by U.S. Air Force aircraft. The official added the APKWS-2 provides a lower-cost air-to-air munition compared to traditional AIM-9X missiles, offering a more financially sustainable solution to defensive U.S. and coalition operations in the Red Sea and across the U.S. Central Command area of responsibility. We've reported on the Advanced Precision Kill Weapon System 2 rockets before, as they were initially designed for ground targets, but also turned out to be a more affordable air-to-air weapon. After years of testing, it seems they're now being used in actual operational missions. While specifics about exactly when, how many, and success rates of the APKWS are still largely unknown, we do know the air-to-air capability was first used last year as U.S. forces worked to take down Houthi drone threats. The main difference between the APKWS-2s and regular unguided 70mm rockets is BAE Systems added a guidance and control section right between the warhead and the motor at the back. This tweak makes them a more affordable option for precision-guided munitions. Plus, operators can use existing parts to make them.
All opinions expressed in this segment are solely the opinions of the contributors.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for us this week on Weapons and Warfare. If you like what you saw, and we hope that you did, please give us a like or follow on our social media platforms and share our stories with your friends. We're really trying to grow our audience here, and we need your help doing that, so thanks in advance. For my wrap this week, I wanted to spend a little time talking about decency. It seems to be lacking of late. Decency is defined as behavior that conforms to accepted standards of morality or respectability. To be a decent person is to be kind. It means you show respect to others. To be decent does not mean you are weak or unintelligent. I would argue in today's world, being decent is one of the greatest displays of strength there is. Because decency during dissent is when it's most important. It doesn't matter if the topic is politics, music, sports, literature, whatever. When you have a disagreement with someone, being decent in the midst of the debate doesn't just keep things civil. It might be the best way to win someone over to your line of thinking. For instance, if my wife and I are trying to decide where to go to dinner, and I say her suggestion is stupid and only an idiot would want to eat there, odds are she's going to veto my suggestion straight out of the gate. While I would love for our politicians and cultural leaders to lead with a little more decency, this message isn't necessarily for them. It's for you on the other side of this screen. Please, practice decency in your lives. We hear every day how divided we are. We see examples every day of people not conforming to accepted standards of morality or respectability. People not being decent to one another. Individuality is great, but in my mind, truly great individuals are also decent human beings. For senior producer Brett Baker, video editor Brian Spencer, and graphics artist Dakota Patillo, I'm Ryan Robertson with Straight Arrow News, signing off.